Afterglow, written and read by Eos Rose. Merlin collapses on top of him, quivering and boneless. Being the generous soul that he is, Arthur permits the indignity. It's not as though Merlin is very heavy, and, well, maybe the closeness isn't really so bad after all. Their breaths mingle, soft puffs of air slowly evening out as exhaustion seeps in. "Arthur?" Merlin says, expression so earnest and open that something in Arthur's belly flutters strangely. "God, I..." "I know," Arthur says, and presses his lips to Merlin's sweaty brow. "But if you start spouting sonnets at me, I will mock you forever. Get some sleep." Such a prat.
The end. Afterglow. Written by Plain Jane and read by Eos Rose. Gawain will proudly admit it was all his idea. Merlin was too naive, too inexperienced, Arthur too reserved, too restrained. Fools, the pair of them, dancing around each other, their unfulfilled desire driving them to distraction. Merlin's lips linger, limbs wrapping loosely over Gawain in an embrace. He murmurs, and Arthur curls in, his leg enfolding them both, his arm snaking possessively over Merlin's, searing their joined hands into Gawain's skin. Soon Gawain will leave them, taking only the warm, glowing memory of Merlin's mouth sucking his cock, while Arthur takes pleasure in Merlin's virgin arse. They need not thank him.
The end.
And finally, Winter, written by AC123 and read by Eos Rose. The snowstorm is sudden and harsh. There are snowdrifts raging 3 feet to 10. The oncoming army is stopped dead, and there's no way that Camelot's men can move more than half a mile, let alone fight. At the camp, where the snow is dusty and forgiving, the soldiers take the day off to catch snowflakes on their tongues, make snow angels, and not face the battle that is peeking over the shoulder of this storm. "Strange, isn't it?" Arthur says to no one in particular, though Merlin is there, leaning against his back. "Having this big snowstorm this late in the season?" Merlin feels like he's being accused, so he buries his face into the hair at the back of Arthur's neck as he answers, "Yeah, really a bit weird." His breath and words cloud against Arthur's neck like a kiss.
The end.
Anything you can do, I can do better. Written and read by Eos Rose.
"Merlin, that's not how the hand motion goes," Arthur says, because he'd watched the visiting sorceress making her demonstration and, much as he enjoys watching Merlin make a fool of himself, there had been no flailing involved. Also, Merlin's grasp of the old tongue is truly disgraceful. He'll have to take care of that. Sooner or later, after the novelty has worn off, someone is going to ask how such an idiot could have possibly snagged the position of court sorcerer. "You're also placing emphasis on the wrong syllables. Why don't you try... If you think you're so clever, why don't you show me how it's done and levitate the damn feather yourself? Honestly, could you be any more of a presumptuous prat? First demanding that I waste my time learning stupid parlor tricks, and then daring to critique my technique when you haven't a magical bone in your body. With skill born of long years of practice, Arthur tunes out Merlin's sullen griping, holds out his right hand in Merlin's direction just as the sorceress had the night before, and intones the words with perfect pitch and clarity. Auf Fliberg Filet! Arthur doesn't actually expect anything to happen. Not really. He's only fooling around. So he's caught utterly off guard when a strange warmth washes over him, floods through his veins, and flows from his open palm in a rush that leaves him gasping. Gods, the power! The sensation only lasts for a few seconds, but in that time he comes to understand why Merlin, why all those poor souls his father had executed over the years, could not bear to give up magic, even with the threat of execution looming near. It was freedom. When the flow of magic tapers off, Arthur blinks through his rapturous haze to see Merlin hovering a foot off the castle floor, blue eyes wide and amazed. Arthur, you...
I didn't mean to. I...
Nid Saratae, Merlin murmurs, eyes flashing gold. And then his feet are firmly on the ground again, and he's launching himself across the room, wrapping around Arthur, and he's pressing laughing kisses to Arthur's face. Oh, Arthur, you did it! You did it! How did you... Gods, you're wonderful, so wonderful! Slowly the shock eases, and Arthur melts into the arms of his lover, content to bask in Merlin's joy, and in his own quiet pleasure. I'll teach you, Merlin whispers against Arthur's lips. There's so much I want to teach you. We'll be so good together, so good, you'll see.
Yes, Arthur thinks. Yes, yes.
The End.
Coronation Day, written by Apple Bacardi and read by Eos Rose. It's a quiet moment, just after the coronation. Merlin's in the kitchens. There's no one there but him and a maid cleaning some dishes. He is stealing cake, and he doesn't even feel guilty about it. He's the royal advisor now. Arthur's king, and everything's just as it should be. He can do these kinds of things, like steal cake. It's really delicious, and it's leftovers anyway, so Merlin figures it's harmless. One of the scullery maids smiles at him flirtatiously as he licks some cake off the spoon. He smiles at her smugly, and she giggles softly. He's happy. He hasn't felt like this in a long time, like there's absolutely nothing that can put him down. No battles to win, no monsters or sorcerers to fight, no telepathic children to hinder, no power-seeking trolls, nothing. He's happy, and he has cake. Life is good. Life is... Well, well, what do we have here? The smile on the maid's face slips as Arthur walks into the kitchens in all his kingly glory, the crown suiting his golden hair, shining as some of the last of sunset's beams of light dance across the newly crowned king. The maid bows low and hurries out of the kitchens quickly. Merlin rolls his eyes and takes another piece of cake and puts it into his mouth. Arthur raises his eyebrows, amused, as he looks at Merlin and smirks. Seems like we have a little cake-stealing kitchen rat in Camelot. Arthur saunters over to Merlin, cocking his head at the sorcerer, a small smile tugging at the corner of his lips. Well, I just thought it would be a shame to throw away such lovely cake, Merlin replies smoothly, licking some cream off his lips. Arthur follows the movement of his tongue, his eyes going dark, and Merlin can almost taste victory. I would have you know that the leftover cake would actually be sent to the newly crowned King of Camelot. But now some random servant with unusually large ears has gone ahead and ruined that plan completely, Arthur says in a low voice and braces his hands against the table on either side of Merlin's waist, pushing him further into the table. Merlin can't help but grin. He's happy and he can't do anything but smile. He'd love to play this little flirtatious game with Arthur, but he's too impatient. So he puts the cake down and looks into Arthur's mischievous eyes. "Arthur," he says, voice quiet and cheerful, and kisses him softly, his hands gripping Arthur's biceps in a firm grip. "Now, what on earth was that for?" Arthur asks, with a smile of his own when Merlin pulls away. "I'm just happy," Merlin says in a whispery, honest voice. Arthur smiles wider, innocent and completely careless. "Are you now?" Arthur kisses him, and Merlin laughs against his lips, just savoring the moment. He is happy.
The End.
For My King, written by Fluffy Goddess and read by Eos Rose. It was night, and Arthur had finally taken off his crown. Now he sat in the dark. Every candle in the room was gathered around the bed, where Merlin lay. Well, Merlin was stretched there, limbs splayed and bound in place. Every once in a while he tried to move, and braided leather creaked. Even though he'd finally admitted to being a wizard and accepted the hastily created post of court sorcerer, Arthur was tempted to tell him his duties would still include oiling these leathers. Lancelot hovered between the pale man's legs, his own skin gilded by the flames' light. As Arthur watched, he licked his lips, slowly, enjoying the stickiness of pre-cum. His hair was tousled, his cheeks flushed, and his own cock was imprisoned in tight lacing, a match for the one he'd just tormented. His only wizard, and the best of his knights, tangled up in ropes in the king's own bed, and he wasn't sure if the heat in his belly was jealousy or satisfaction. "My lord," Lancelot said formally, and he stood. When he got closer, he could see that Merlin's face was unusually flushed and sweaty, his eyes pleading. Then again, they didn't usually play such games for so long, and he probably should have expected that. "Enjoying yourselves?" he asked. Merlin glared up at him. "You are both sadists, both of you," he snickered. "You're the one who said, 'I don't care what you have to do, you two have to start getting along.'" "Yes, but I wasn't expecting to be tied up and teased for 3 hours." "Two," Lancelot corrected helpfully. "And you did agree," Arthur added mildly. Merlin's glare did not abate, though he smiled a little when his king gripped his shoulder, and unspoken, "Are you still all right with this?" and "Yes, you prat." And that kind of silent communication was something they'd learned over years together, something that was just for them, something Merlin and Lancelot didn't yet share, and that helped to make it all right that there were things they did. Still, it had been hours, and Merlin normally couldn't hold out for more than a few minutes when Arthur got really creative. "Finish the show," he ordered, reaching down to pull loose the ties holding back his wizard's orgasm. "For my king," Lancelot murmured, and bent to his task. Swollen, well-used lips closed around Merlin's shaft, wetting it all over again, and then his cheeks hollowed with suction, and Merlin tensed in his bonds. Braided leather and golden light and muscles starkly defined beneath his skin, his eyes open on nothing as he shuddered and gasped and came. A sacrifice of pleasure, drawn by his knight from his wizard's body. Arthur smiled and tangled his hand in that crow's nest of hair. That would take the pressure off for one of his men, and the game could begin again.
The End.
4 times Merlin made a fool of himself, and 1 time Arthur did. Written by Lucifer's Toy and read by Eos Rose. 1. When one has, in his backpack, 2 heavy textbooks, a wallet, a bottle of water, headache tablets, a novel, a jumper, a scarf, two pencils, a sharpener, a ruler, a calculator, assorted paper clips, chewing gum, and a single sock. Trying to find any one item is a difficult task. Merlin knows this very well. He is struggling to make his way out the door, head down, with one arm being eaten by the depths of his bag, and he isn't really paying attention as he walks. So, of course, one of the straps catches on the inside handle of the door he's walking through and catapults him backwards, the contents of his bag flying out to surround him as he lands on, a curiously warm and swearing surface. Merlin lies there, stunned, as wetness spreads in his hair, and a voice swears thickly at him, and then, horrified, says, "Oh my God, there's blood in my hair!" Then there are hands hauling him up, and Gwen, lovely Gwen, who eyes him with concern and maybe the slightest hint of amusement. She turns him around, and they both look at the poor bloke on the floor, watching him struggle to sit up with his hands clamped to his nose and one of his mates kneeling next to him. "What the bloody hell?" the blonde guy shouts, and his voice comes out thick and slurred. "Gwen, do you know this idiot?" Merlin blinks, taken aback, and looks at Gwen, who is grimacing, pulling out tissues from her pocket to hand to him. "Arthur, are you all right?" she asks, helping him to his feet, and grimacing at the red coating his chin. "Oh, God, I'm so sorry. It was an accident. I'm an idiot. Oh, my God," Merlin says, all in a rush. "You aren't wrong there," Arthur snaps and wheels around, shaking off his friend's hand. "Stay the hell away from me, you moron," and stalks off angrily. Gwen winces, wrapping her hand around Merlin's arm, and drags him away, calling over her shoulder to Arthur, "I hope you feel better soon." Merlin cringes again. "Blood," he says miserably. "In my hair." 2. It's still only the second week of university, and Merlin hasn't quite gotten the hang of things, struggling to make it to lectures on time, or with the right books, or fully dressed. He's just unbelievably grateful that he has darling Gwen and, bizarrely, Morgana Le Fay, her roommate. Morgana, Merlin has decided, is gorgeous and kind and so terrifying that Merlin cannot sleep with her near him. He trips into his lecture late, cursing himself, with one shoe only half on, and his jumper on backwards, and pinwheels himself to a stop, eyes widening as he meets the gaze of his professor. "Sorry, sir," he squeaks as Professor Gaius raises the eyebrows of Herbal Doom at him, and for once deciding that discretion is the better part of valor, he turns sharply and tries to find an empty seat, preferably one next to Gwen, nearly sprinting up the stairs. Instead, of course, his eyes meet Arthur, who's sitting next to Morgana with his arms crossed and slouching, glaring at Merlin. Oh, God. Merlin had forgotten how big he was, and how strong. He stops again. This time, he trips right over a table leg and lands on the floor by Morgana, who snorts aloud even as she smiles, dragging him up with her, oh, terrifying strength. Merlin kind of wants to die, just a little bit. 3. This university lark, Merlin thinks, is actually not so bad once you get the hang of it. That being said, he is in the corner of the library with his hands in his hair, tugging fretfully as he stares down at his philosophy textbook. "Why, Gwen?" he moans, head hitting the table. "Why did I take this subject? Why didn't I do history like you, or anthropology like Morgana, or anything else like anyone else? Why would you let me do this to myself?" Gwen rolls her eyes, but smiles at him. "Come on, Merlin. It's just a small test. It isn't so bad. And actually, you know what? I think Lancelot took this subject last semester. Would you like me to call him for you?" Merlin looks up, He has a post-it note stuck to his face. "Gwen, you are a goddess amongst mortals," he says sincerely. "Please, yes, that would be incredible. Thank you." Gwen quickly texts Lancelot, smiling to herself. Once that's done, she glares Merlin into silence, and they both immerse themselves in their work until Merlin's large but useful ears prick at the sound of footsteps. He cranes around to beam at Lancelot, although his smile falters just a little at the sight of Arthur instead of the man he was expecting. They've gotten over their original animosity. Well, somewhat, but they still aren't what you would call friends. Nevertheless, Merlin has grown fond of the Pratt. "Hey," he says quietly, mindful of the studious hush in the library. "Hey," Arthur says, hesitantly standing by him. He nods at Merlin and bends to kiss Gwen's cheek politely. "Lance is still showering after football practice, so he sent me up ahead."
"Oh, lovely," Gwen says. "You did philosophy last term, right? Merlin needs some help."
"Yeah." Arthur looks at Merlin curiously and drops into the seat next to him. "What are you studying at the moment?" Merlin pushes the book closer to him and colors, just a little, pink creeping up his neck at Arthur's proximity. Arthur moves a little closer, shifting in as he starts to teach Merlin, voice low and intimate. And Merlin realizes with some surprise that Arthur actually seems to know this stuff, to care, and that maybe shouldn't be so surprising. But it makes him just a little, just a tad, uncomfortable, the hot line of Arthur pressed up his side, and he shifts on the awkward wooden chair until something creaks. He has a split second to swear, and then he's on the floor amongst the wreckage, with an angry librarian on her way to yell at him. 4. This one time, Merlin is determined that nothing will go wrong. He will have a good night with his friends without embarrassing himself. It will happen. It doesn't happen. Morgana keeps plying him with liquor, insisting on buying him bright, colorful drinks with ridiculous names, laughing when half of it ends up down his shirt. He's happy, standing with Morgana and Arthur at the bar, while Lancelot and Gwen twirl on the dance floor, a blur amongst other bodies apart from the bright yellow of Gwen's dress. Arthur is standing too close to Merlin, warm along his side, but he doesn't mind, and instead leans against him a little, feeling sleepy and warm around the edges. He hums softly, and Arthur laughs quietly, leaning around Merlin to look at his sister, voice amused as he says, "I'm going to take him outside for a bit, see if I can sober him up. You'll be all right?" Merlin knows without looking that Morgana's smile is sharp as she shoots back, "I think I can manage myself for 5 minutes, yes. Now go and look after your Merlin." "He's not my Merlin," Arthur says, but he doesn't sound that irritated to Merlin, and he has already started to move them across the club, one arm draped around Merlin's waist, hand curved around his hip. Merlin lifts his head when they step into the cool air outside, blinking his eyes open. The silence is nice, but his stomach is starting to feel a little queasy, and he bites his lip for a moment. Behind him, Arthur clears his throat awkwardly and moves to lean against the wall, not looking at Merlin.
"Merlin, you know that, well, I... it's just that..."
He starts and then stops abruptly because Merlin's gone and thrown up across his shoes and is listing towards the ground alarmingly. Arthur sighs. "Bloody Morgana." 1. Arthur stands to one side, glaring as this small girl approaches Merlin, all wide eyes and clumsy fawn limbs. He watches as they talk, both of them smiling shyly and looking at each other through their bangs, laughter soft and awkward.
It's disgusting, is what it is, and Arthur really doesn't need his damned sister to come up beside him and point out what a good time Merlin's having and what a lovely girl Freya is. So, of course, that's exactly what Morgana does. Bloody harpy. They make a good couple, don't they? Morgana says, eyeing Arthur slyly. And Arthur feels a headache start to throb behind his temples. Piss off, Ganna, he manages, and Morgana's eyes soften just a little. You do know that he has a huge, embarrassing crush on you, right? Ever since you first met, he's never lost that. He's well on his way to being in love with you. God knows why. What? No, he isn't, Arthur says reflexively, but looks at Merlin again. He does, Morgana promises. But he might not for long. After all, Freya is very beautiful. Arthur growls a little, and Morgana laughs in delight, pushing him forward. Go on, go and get your boy, she says, and drifts over to Gwen and Lance as Arthur stalks away. What was that about? Gwen asks curiously, and Morgana hushes her and tells her to watch, and the three of them smile when Arthur forcibly drags Merlin away to dip him into this deep, awkward, arching kiss, and then they laugh when Merlin moves to try and drag him closer, their feet somehow tangling, and they somehow end up on the floor in one big painful heap. Seems fitting, somehow.
The End.
Gleam, written by Daria 234 and read by Eos Rose. Merlin's face bobs in and out of the firelight as he laughs, light and shade dappling the lines of his expression, the jaw, the cheekbones, the lashes of his eyes. Arthur smiles at him and thinks for a moment what it would be like to pull him out of the glow of the light of the fire, to drag him into the dark, out of the sight of the other knights. He wonders if Merlin might surprise him, might turn out to be better with darkness than he lets on. Arthur makes a bad joke, and Merlin grins. He's laughing at his prince, not with him, but the gleam of Merlin's lips in the firelight makes it worth it. And so Arthur tells another.
The End.
Hold Hard, written by Harito Mene and read by Eos Rose. Arthur just couldn't help himself after Merlin's admission that he'd never done anything like this before, that he'd never let anyone but Arthur use him like this. A few illicit blowjobs here and there, a couple of furtive, fumbling handjobs with boys back in Aeldor, and that was the sum total of Merlin's experience. For some reason, that had been the biggest turn-on for Arthur. For instance, now, with Merlin in his bed, face down in the pillows, up on his knees with his arse in the air, Arthur just wants to fuck him harder, grip his hips more tightly until his hands bruise the pale skin there, marking Merlin forever. He wants to imprint himself on Merlin, make sure Merlin never looks elsewhere for this, wants to fuck Merlin until he knows exactly where he belongs, under Arthur, in his bed. So that's exactly what he does. He loves doing this to Merlin, fucking him until Merlin can't see straight, can't sit down the next morning, loves watching the catch in Merlin's stride and knowing that he put it there, that he marked Merlin in a way no one else will ever really see. Oh, they'll see the way Merlin holds himself carefully, can't walk properly, and they'll know that the prince has had him again, and they'll gossip about it, but they'll never see the way Merlin's raw fucked hole puffs around his cock, or the bruises on his hips, the bite marks Arthur gives Merlin on his shoulder blades. Arthur does like marking Merlin visibly, just loves watching those pale cheeks flush red as people ask him about the bite marks on his neck. But for some reason, it's the marks no one will ever see which please him the most. Merlin is his, in ways no one else will ever know, and in ways no one else will ever, has ever, experienced. That thought takes him over the edge, and he comes inside Merlin with a grunt, for the second time that night, reaching round under his manservant to jerk him off with rough, unstudied movements, relentless until Merlin comes himself, a few moments later with a cry that is pulled almost unwillingly out of his throat. His knees give way, and Arthur lands on top of him as he sprawls onto the bed, the prince's weight forcing him deeper into the mattress. For a moment, Arthur takes his time to enjoy having Merlin under him, toys with the idea of keeping him that way until he's ready to take him again. It's not like Merlin doesn't enjoy that sort of thing, now that Arthur has taught him about it. But in the end, he rolls both of them over and maneuvers Merlin, sated and pliant, until he's sitting in Arthur's lap with Arthur's cock still inside him, compliant to a fault. Arthur takes a moment to be tender with his lover in a way they aren't during sex, stroking one hand up his thigh and asking, voice low, "Are you all right?" Merlin's smile is warm and satisfied. "Oh, yes," he says fervently, "better than all right." "Good." The soft stroking becomes a stinging smack, and Merlin jerks, not wholly surprised, but not quite expecting it either. "You can ride me again in a minute." It doesn't take long for Arthur's cock to harden again, but then, with Merlin in his lap looking like that, the muscles of his arse clenching around his cock with every shift and movement, it would have been more surprising if it had taken long. Merlin lands another smack on Merlin's thigh, admiring the way his handprint stands out red on the pale skin, and nods at him. "Ride me," he orders, and Merlin obeys, bringing his knees under him on the mattress and forcing himself up on Arthur's cock. Watching him is gorgeous. Watching him fuck himself on Arthur's cock until he can't remember his own name is always gorgeous for Arthur, but he does eventually get bored of it and flips them both over on the bed without a moment's warning. Merlin underneath him with his legs spread wide for Arthur, head thrown back in bliss as Arthur thrusts roughly into him, another gorgeous sight. Especially gorgeous is the knowledge that Merlin will be feeling tonight for days to come. Arthur comes after Merlin this time, enjoying fucking Merlin through that oversensitive stage when his thrusts must bring at least as much pain as pleasure. And he pulls out this time, pulling Merlin's legs open even further and bending his knees to get a better look at his arse. His hole is fucked open, cum oozing out lazily, and Arthur smiles, satisfied. That's exactly how he likes to keep Merlin, open and wet for him, because of him. Merlin smiles at him again, at his most amenable at this stage, even though his eyelids are drooping and he's so sated he looks half asleep. "Everything you wanted?" he asks, because he really does know Arthur better than anyone else, understands every one of Arthur's forbidden desires, and gives into them for him. And yes, this, all of it, is exactly what Arthur wants. Not just Merlin's arse, opened by his cock and oozing with his cum, but this whole thing they have going on. He leans up and kisses him wetly on the mouth. "Yes," he says quietly. "Perfect." They lie next to each other in silence for a few moments. Then Arthur speaks up again. "You know, you won't be able to walk tomorrow." He can't quite keep the satisfaction out of his voice. "Walk?" Merlin's own voice is sleepy but amused. "I don't think I'll be able to sit up." Arthur smiles, and Merlin's hand flaps ineffectually at him in what's supposed to be a smack but ends up as just an affectionate sort of pat. He leaves his hand just resting warmly on Arthur's hip. "And you love it, you bastard." Arthur rests his hand on top of Merlin's at his hip. "I do," he agrees softly. They say nothing more, but somehow this thing, all of it, is just perfect.
The End.
In His Hands, written by Bent Rumors and read by Eos Rose. Arthur and Merlin passed several servants in the corridor while walking to Arthur's chambers. Merlin's bowed shoulders and pained gait were obvious to all, and Arthur heard the whispers beginning behind them before they were out of hearing range. The rumors of Arthur's brutality were not unfounded. He was a champion in the arena, a ruthless trainer to his knights, and a heartless master to his household. Everyone in the castle feared his wrath, pitied his manservant, and knew nothing of his heart. Arthur ignored Merlin's crumpled brow at his fellow servant's comments, and gave one servant, daring to meet his eyes, a violent glare, until the girl lowered her gaze. When they reached Arthur's chambers, he said, "Take off your clothes." Merlin tried to escape. "I haven't cleaned your armor yet, and..." Arthur bolted the door and pushed Merlin back toward the bed. "Oh, I know. There will be consequences for that, too. But don't make this worse on yourself. Do try to follow one order today, Merlin. I said, take off your clothes." Merlin's eyes narrowed, and he raised his chin a bit. "Yes, sire." He undressed slowly, partially due to pain, but mostly reticence. "Now lie down," Arthur said impatiently when Merlin stood fidgeting from foot to foot. Arthur found the vial he wanted on the side table and climbed on the bed to kneel between Merlin's legs. He lifted Merlin's ankle onto his shoulder and put Merlin's hand on his prick when Merlin squirmed uncomfortably. "Stroke. It'll help with the pain." Merlin looked unconvinced. He rubbed at his prick disinterestedly, and Arthur rolled his eyes. He licked his palm and took Merlin's prick firmly in hand, demanding its immediate attention. "Trust me." "Oh, Merlin sighed, finally relaxing. His fingers brushed Arthur's forearm, idly matching Arthur's rhythm. "That's nice." Arthur snorted and put Merlin's hand back on his prick. "Don't stop." He opened the vial and smeared the slick goop on his fingers. Merlin was watching nervously and tried to pull his foot down off Arthur's shoulder. Arthur clasped his ankle and kissed it. "Just relax and breathe deep. It only stings for a few moments." Merlin hissed and bucked when Arthur began rubbing the salve into the long red gash running from the back of Merlin's knee to his buttock. So Arthur had lied. It burned like the fires of hell. He viciously worked the ointment deeper, punishing Merlin for his continued carelessness. "Really, Merlin, you have to be the clumsiest person ever born. No wonder all of Camelot thinks I regularly beat you within an inch of your life."
The End.
Jigsaw Porn, written by Waldorf and read by Eos Rose. What Merlin loves, is to be bent over Arthur's table, fingernails scratching grooves into the smooth wood and the edge biting against his hips every time Arthur slams into him. And Arthur is slamming, a hand hard and heavy on Merlin's shoulder and the other on his waist. And even if Merlin wanted to get up, to shift position or stop, he couldn't, has to take it, whatever Arthur wants, whatever Arthur deigns to give him. Arthur is hot at Merlin's back, breath scratching out of his throat, but other than that, so, so quiet. And Merlin's the one who's gasping and mewling and begging, and Merlin could hate him for it, for laying Merlin wide open like this, making it obvious how desperate he is to have Arthur's cock splitting him apart. Except for how much he loves it. And Arthur is huge in Merlin's ass, fucking him so hard Merlin can feel it in the back of his throat. He could gag on it if Arthur just pressed in a little harder. And at that thought, Merlin's mouth waters desperately, too greedy, always too greedy for every piece of Arthur all at once.
Arthur's a bastard, too, because he's deliberately missing Merlin's prostate, except when he hits it dead on. And Merlin knows it's never an accident. Arthur knows just what he's doing, because if Merlin could twist, he knows he'd see a smug look in Arthur's eyes. Sporadic and not enough, but Merlin knows better than to reach for his cock. Bad things happen when he takes liberties. Things like Arthur finishing himself off and never once touching Merlin, and sending him back to Gaius still panting for it. And so he whispers, "Arthur, please." Arthur bites the back of Merlin's neck, and Merlin shouts as Arthur cants his hips and fucks Merlin into coming too hard, too fast, on his prostate with every single stroke, screaming his throat raw and clenching down on the cock that's still brutally fucking into him, pressing back into Arthur's body. And Merlin's knees are buckling, but he's stuck between the table and Arthur, who finally, finally comes, hot and pulsing inside Merlin, and when he pulls out, still able to walk, the bastard, Merlin can feel Arthur's cum dripping down his ass and his thighs, and he collapses against the floor, propped against Arthur's leg. From there, it's easy to turn his head and clean Arthur's cock with his tongue. Arthur's hand settles on his head, fisting almost gently in his hair as Merlin laps at the tip and sucks Arthur's spent cock into his mouth. "So perfect," Arthur murmurs, and Merlin smiles up at him, and if they're very suddenly in the bed, well, surely it's just a trick of their sex-addled minds.
The end. Just One of Those Things, written by Sorin and read by Eos Rose. Whenever they sleep beside each other, whether it's on bedrolls in the woods, or in a cot, or in some inn because Merlin would complain all night if forced to sleep on the floor while Arthur spread himself over a bed big enough for three, whenever they sleep beside each other, Merlin inevitably wakes up with Arthur draped all over him. They never talk about it, and Arthur always peels himself away quickly upon regaining consciousness. It's kind of nice, if rather weird, and Merlin has come to accept this as one of those things that just happens with Arthur, like weekly assassination attempts and embarrassing haberdashery. So Merlin's rather surprised when he wakes before dawn one morning in one of those oversized inn beds to find Arthur curled on his side a good 3 or 4 inches away. Merlin, laying on his back, is in no particular rush to move, so he just stays there, eyes closed, slightly bemused by Arthur's deviation from the usual habit. He's not even aware that he's listening to Arthur's breathing until it changes, until it picks up, a startling intake of air indicating that Arthur is awake. Merlin doesn't move, and tries to keep his own breathing as even as possible. It's ridiculously early yet. Maybe Arthur will just roll over and go back to sleep. Maybe... Arthur makes a quiet, displeased sound, and Merlin braces himself, expecting to be shoved out of bed, or at the very least grumbled at. Instead, he hears Arthur stretch, joints cracking, and yawn in an exaggerated, artificial manner, almost like he's the one pretending he's not actually awake yet. Then the mattress dips as Arthur's weight shifts towards Merlin, and then an arm flops over Merlin's middle, and there's a cold nose and warm breath against Merlin's shoulder, bare where the neck of his unlaced shirt has slid down. Arthur holds himself very still for a moment, as if checking for a reaction, and when he doesn't get one, he tucks Merlin in a little closer against him and sighs happily. Merlin opens his eyes, stares at disheveled blonde hair, and a strong arm, and what is, unmistakably, Arthur cuddling him. On purpose. He suppresses the urge to laugh, and instead carefully slides his arm out from beneath the sheets and settles it across Arthur's back. Arthur freezes at the contact, though he doesn't pull away. "Merlin?" Arthur whispers tentatively. "You could have just said," Merlin whispers back. "Shut up," Arthur says. Merlin does. Arthur's fingers work their way under the hem of Merlin's shirt, cool against the sleep-warm skin, and the next time they have to share a bed, Arthur doesn't bother waiting for Merlin to fall asleep, before manhandling him into a clumsy embrace. The end. Mind Reading, written by Entangled Now and read by Eos Rose. Merlin doesn't mean to touch the lizard creature. It's a complete accident, but when Arthur stabs it to death, he's pretty much in flailing range, and he might, ever so slightly, have flailed a hand against it. Which is, unfortunately, about as much contact as you need to end up with the uncontrollable ability to read people's thoughts. Arthur's scowling down at him, looking unhappily from Merlin to the dead monster. All Arthur's thinking in that hectic, confusing moment is that he really, really hopes Merlin can't read his mind. But then suddenly he's not just thinking that, he's apparently thinking everything else. It's a blunder of thoughts, all panicked and tripping over each other, broken and jumbled. Occasionally there's a flash of his face, his voice, and he thinks perhaps his skin, quickly trampled on and overwritten by smeared-out thoughts about the palace and Uther and, for some bizarre reason, his own boots.
Dear God, don't be hearing any of this.
Merlin, you touched it? Can you hear what I'm thinking? Arthur doesn't look happy about the idea in the slightest. So Merlin makes a split-second decision. He pulls his face into something confused and sore-looking. What? No, I mean, I don't think so. Think something. Arthur very carefully thinks about Uther. It's a very forced sort of repetition inside his head, though he does slip once and think about the time he accidentally saw Morgana's left breast. That time she left the screen in her room tilted at just the right angle. Nope. I can't hear anything, or see anything, or whatever, Merlin says carefully. It must have worn off when it died. He doesn't miss the way Arthur relaxes, ever so slightly, before covering it with a huff of impatience. Then Arthur's thinking that he's secretly glad Merlin's not hurt, though he also thinks he looks untidy sprawled on the stones, and he very much wants to kiss him until he looks even more untidy. Merlin carefully blinks at him. Arthur scowls back. Well, are you going to lay there all day, or are you going to get me something to eat? I'm going to get you something to eat, Merlin hazards. Apparently he doesn't win a prize for guessing right. Merlin has learned a lot of things he never expected during his 2 days as an accidental mind reader, which is about half as long as the condition is supposed to last. Some of those things are more disturbing than others. Servants know everything. Really, they do. It's terrifying. Uther's brain is a very, very disturbing place where everything is warped and mutated by his hatred of magic and his need to protect his kingdom. Sometimes he dreams he turns into a monster and eats Arthur. Merlin's starting to avoid him as much as possible. Morgana likes to imagine ways to creatively murder different people in the castle that annoy her. Merlin is now forced to accept that she's imagined killing him every single time she's been cross with him. Gaius thinks about dead animals far, far too much. Gwen gets songs stuck in her head. Constantly. Oh, and Arthur wants to have sex with him. A lot. It's very distracting because Merlin isn't necessarily against the possibility of Arthur having sex with him. Though Arthur's never given any indication that he wants to outside of his focused and occasionally filthy brain. Merlin's starting to worry that he's just hallucinating it all. Arthur is currently not thinking about sex with him. He's thinking about his armor, which he's piling up in Merlin's arms, like he won't fall over if balanced too much on one side, and complaining about Merlin's ability to make him look like a prat in front of anyone within range. Though he'd protest that making him look like is a bit of a stretch, since Arthur rarely needs help there. You insulted me and generally made yourself look like a complete disaster, which can't help but make me look like an idiot by default.
I think I deserve... I deserve you, damn it.
Damn everything.
Why must you make everything so difficult?
Merlin rubs the middle of his forehead and pretends the solid huff of surprise he makes is frustration. Frustration rather than, God, anything else.
Merlin, are you even listening?
What? Yes, of course. Of course I'm listening. He smiles in case that helps. It obviously doesn't. Arthur thinks his mouth is ridiculous and far too fond of back-talking him, and all full of insults that hide behind his stupid little smile. Arthur quite likes his mouth. He thinks, quite graphically, of a use he'd quite like to put it to, and Merlin drops absolutely everything he's carrying. Arthur watches the armor cascade to the floor, watches Merlin blink in startled shock for a handful of seconds.
You heard that, didn't you? Arthur says quietly, and his face is almost completely unreadable.
Heard what? Merlin has bluffed his way out of worse situations than this before. He's bluffed his way out of certain death. This is nothing.
You heard what I was just thinking.
No, I didn't. Merlin fidgets.
Stop fidgeting. It makes you look guilty.
Merlin immediately forces his hands to still. Arthur lifts an eyebrow as if to say, got you.
You're a liar, Arthur says under his breath. A filthy liar. I've been suspicious for a few days now. You're better at hiding things than I thought you were.
The last is flung out as more of an accusation.
I think perhaps you should be punished.
Merlin makes a noise because he knows he's in trouble, knows he's in so much trouble.
Unlace me.
Merlin moves his hands to do exactly that without thinking about it, fingers skittering over Arthur's bare chest, and Arthur huffs like it's more proof.
We're going to talk about this tomorrow.
Arthur clearly wants to be fierce, but his voice is heavy, too thick to be anything angry.
Tomorrow. Merlin says faintly, but then Arthur looks at him, and he can't talk at all.
But you're forbidden from holding anything I might think against me.
I wouldn't do that, Merlin says quietly.
Take my shirt off. Merlin slides his hands underneath, fingertips against the warmth of Arthur's skin. He pushes the red fabric over Arthur's head and lets it fall behind him.
Though, should you decide to act on any of them, that will be entirely your own choice.
Merlin thinks maybe he could get used to Arthur's voice in his head after all. The end.
My baby, he wrote me a letter. Written by Llama 1412 and read by Eos Rose. Since the coronation and his own promotion, Merlin didn't see anywhere near as much of Arthur as he would like. The king had many duties to fulfill, after all, and only a few of them required the presence of the court sorcerer. And it wasn't as if he never saw Arthur. They lived in close quarters. Much closer, in fact, than much of the court was aware. The king's bed, while often slept in by his wife, and occasionally her champion, was not frequented by the king, who preferred to make his bed next door with the court sorcerer. Merlin's quarters were never entered by the maids, first because they were wary of the magic, and later because he didn't really need people to clean up for him when all it took was a flick of his wrist. Therefore, the extensive servant gossip network was unaware that most every possession the king held dear lay in varying spots around Merlin's chambers. So, yes, Merlin still saw Arthur, but it wasn't quite the same. He was no longer there to hear every thought and disparaging remark that crossed the Pratt's mind. To be honest, Merlin missed it, even though most of the disparaging comments were directed towards him. It made him a little lonely to realize that it wouldn't happen anymore. Not like it used to. He wasn't expecting Arthur to pick up on this. Even if the Pratt felt the same, he wasn't likely to say it. So it was with a flush of pleasure that he left the antechamber / office of magical experimentation to find a little note sitting on the table that definitely hadn't been there before. I read a report earlier about a nobleman that got lost in his own chambers and thought of you. Idiot. Yours, Arthur. Merlin caught himself grinning stupidly at the little note and squashed it immediately. It was just a silly little message in which Arthur had managed to insult him. There was really nothing to be so pleased about. That didn't stop him from carefully shutting the note into his old magic book, the one Gaius had given him when he'd first come to Camelot, for safekeeping. Nor did it stop him from later pressing Arthur down onto the bed and sucking loving kisses down his chest, loneliness forgotten for the moment. A month later, Merlin was suffering a near breakdown, as everything that could possibly go wrong that day was going wrong. Gwen had tried to console him, stroking his back and directing the frustrated sparks flying off his fingers away from anything flammable. And true, he was better off for not having to douse a fire, especially since the way this day was going, something would go wrong, and the entire castle would end up covered in bright purple sludge. But it was with a heavy air of exhaustion that he entered his bedchamber after Gwen had booted him out of his office. He nearly crumpled the parchment scrap on his pillow when he flopped onto the bed. Feeling lighter already, he unfolded the note and read, with a lazy smile grazing his lips, "Your influence has been atrocious. I nearly called this visiting king a prat. Won't help the alliance any, that. Yours, Arthur." When Arthur returned later that evening, he found Merlin curled up on his side, note cradled in his hands and lips still upturned. "Idiots," he murmured, hands combing through Merlin's wild hair. "My idiot." He bent down to press a kiss to Merlin's forehead before settling into sleep himself. The letters never became a regular thing Merlin could look forward to, but they were altogether better for the pleasant surprise they brought. So he was disappointed when 3 months went by without a single message. Arthur was busy, true, doing official things, but Merlin missed him. He felt like he was now seeing less of Arthur than he had before. Each morning, Arthur was up before dawn and gone by the time Merlin rose. Each evening, he came in yawning halfway into the night and toppled onto the bed with a groan. Merlin understood this, understood that Arthur was stressed and overworked and didn't have time for a relationship. He really did. There was a new festival coming to town, and the court was flooded with courtiers from all reaches of the kingdom, so it made perfect sense that Arthur was a bit overworked. But then Arthur stopped coming to Merlin's room at all. The first night he'd been concerned, thinking that perhaps some disaster had befallen the kingdom, but he knew Arthur would call for him if it was warranted. He didn't go looking for him. He was too exhausted, tired from the day's events, and figured Arthur would show up later. The next morning, it occurred to him that maybe Arthur had just fallen asleep in the throne room. It wouldn't be surprising, really, not with all the hours he was spending there. Yeah, that was surely it, but Merlin never got the chance to ask him. He didn't see Arthur at all anymore. Council meetings had been suspended during the festival, and all the castle staff were out enjoying the show. Arthur was nowhere to be found. Morgana mentioned later that Arthur had gone to the festival with his queen, had led the dancing couples in the night's first dance, and had stayed, surrounded by the merrymakers for a much-needed holiday. She could see Merlin's eyes dim from across the room. "Merlin?" "It's nothing." He gave a weak smile and left quickly. He decided he needed some time away. He headed off to saddle his usual steed,
leaving her with the stablemaster while he gathered his belongings. When he got back, though, the stablemaster was gone, and Arthur stood in his place, eyebrows raised imperiously. "Going somewhere?" he asked. Merlin's heart twinged, looking at that arrogant face, lined with exhaustion, but ultimately happy. He looked away. "Yes," he said to the reins, taking them from Arthur's hands and holding them steady while he strapped his bag onto the horse. "You know, generally people ask the king before they bugger off to God knows where." "Good for them. You're in my way, sire," Merlin said, tone flat as he mounted and steered around his liege. "Merlin?" Arthur's confused voice followed him through the courtyard and out into the forest. He stayed out in the woods for 3 days. He almost didn't come back, but decided that, ultimately, he was still Arthur's sorcerer. He couldn't leave his king defenseless, and he owed Camelot more than his desertion. So he returned, late at night, so he could avoid notice. He shouldn't have bothered. As soon as he entered his chambers, he found Arthur asleep in his bed. "Of course," his mind offered cynically. Arthur hated moving. His stuff was still here, so of course he would deign to stay here, as long as Merlin wasn't there, it seemed. It was almost enough to make him leave again. He wouldn't abandon Arthur, of course, but he could always live elsewhere and help from afar. It wouldn't be too hard to manage. But then he saw the note. He couldn't not read it. Arthur's notes were something he held dear, all of them pressed neatly between the pages of his most loved magic book. So he walked quietly to the bed and picked up the paper from his pillow. "Okay, first of all, I want to make it clear that I am doing this under great duress by Morgana, and that I would never otherwise use such sappy language. Understood? I love you. I love the way you look at me and see a Pratt instead of a royal. I love that you refuse to be intimidated by me and refuse to back down no matter what. I love that you smile at me and treat me like any man. I love that, with you, I know exactly where I stand. So I'm making it clear now where you stand. I love you. I have tried to give my heart to others, those whom I might be expected to love, but I can't. There is no one like you, and you alone hold my heart. I know I don't say this enough. I know I'm an idiot for not realizing you needed it. But here it is, flat out. There will never be anyone but you. You're stuck with me, and I would never wish it otherwise. Yours forever, Arthur." "Oh," Merlin uttered, tears welling up in his eyes. He clapped a hand over his mouth as the figure on the bed shifted and sat up. "Merlin?" a groggy voice inquired. Arthur blinked lazily at him before it apparently processed, and he shot up. "You're back! Where were you? I can't believe you just left. I thought..." He cut himself off. "You're back," he concluded, reaching a hand out to cup Merlin's face. "You're back." "Yes," Merlin whispered through his hand, not thinking to take it away. A tear slid down his cheek. "Merlin." Arthur pulled him forward, guiding his face to Arthur's neck, hands cradling the back of his head. "I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I'm sorry. I never meant to make you think." He swallowed, his Adam's apple bobbing next to Merlin's head. "I was busy, and when I finally finished, I wanted to bring you to the festival, but Guinevere caught me first, and I didn't find you until the second day in the stables, and you... well, I'm sorry." He pressed a kiss to Merlin's forehead. "Morgana made me see what had happened, and I mean it, Merlin. Etiquette has been too ingrained. You know that, but I really do love you. Please, don't leave me again."
Never, Merlin mumbled into Arthur's collarbone. Never, never, never. I'm sorry. Never. He kept saying until Arthur pulled him up into a kiss. The festival ended tonight, Arthur began some time later. Everyone got completely pissed. The court won't be waking up until well past noon. I think we deserve a lion, no? Besides, I'm the king. I can do what I bloody well please. Prat, Merlin grinned, pressing his lips to Arthur's again. The end. The Prince's New Clothes, written by Sarah Triple Y and read by Eos Rose. What do you mean Gaius isn't here? Arthur Pendragon snapped angrily at Merlin, who winced slightly. He knew I was coming. Yes, Mr. Pendragon, sir. Gaius instructed me to see to your needs before he got here. My name is Merlin. I'm Gaius's apprentice, Merlin replied apologetically. Gaius, he will be back soon, hopefully. It was an emergency, sir. Arthur checked his watch. He had 3 hours till Morgana's engagement party. Damn Morgana for unannounced surprises. He needed that suit. Grudgingly, he turned to Merlin. Black tailcoat, single-breasted, shawl lapels, jetted pockets, black trousers, single silk braid, he listed quickly, his lips tipping up in an amused smirk as Merlin jotted the details furiously down on his notepad. Low-cut waistcoat in black, white dress shirt with a turned-down collar, black-ribbed silk bow tie in grosgrain. You got all that down? Merlin's tongue darted out to wet his lips slightly as he continued to scribble on his notepad. Yes, sir. Would there be anything else? I'll need them this evening, Arthur said brusquely, brushing some imaginary lint off his shirt. I assume I shall receive my suit when I come back in 2 hours' time. Merlin wasn't sure if he was supposed to answer. It was phrased like a question, but it sounded nothing like one. More like an offhanded statement. Was one supposed to answer an offhanded statement? He cleared his throat to clear some of his phase one inner panic. Merlin wasn't sure, but he nodded once, too, just in case. Arthur Pendragon was a VIP patron of Camelot's tailors. Gaius had all but ordered him to treat Arthur Pendragon like he was a prince before he left. I will need to take your measurements, sir, Merlin said, his yellow tailor's tape already in hand. Arthur looked affronted. Take my measurements? He echoed slowly. Merlin was befuddled. Had he left out any steps? No, it was the time to take measurements. Yes, it was. Yes? Gaius would have known my measurements in his sleep, came the displeased reply that was paired with an elegant arch of his eyebrow. Cue phase two inner panic. What in the name of all that was good and holy was he supposed to do now? He really didn't want to cost Gaius an important client. Gaius had been nice enough to give him a job and a place to stay and help for his condition. This was bad, really, really bad. Merlin had to be having one of his lucky days, for at that moment Arthur just waved his hand dismissively in his direction. Make it quick, he snapped. Merlin let out a breath of relief, then almost immediately went into phase three inner panic. What was he supposed to measure first? He blinked some of his confusion away. There was something about Arthur Pendragon that made him feel uncomfortable. Trousers. Start from the trousers, then slowly work up. Merlin knelt before Arthur and started to do his job. His hand stilled suddenly as he realized how suggestive the situation was. A blush worked its way up to his cheeks, slowly. If you wanted to cop a feel, Arthur drawled lazily, looking down at Merlin, all you had to do was ask. Merlin blushed harder. I,
Stand up, Arthur commanded. Merlin did so, and Arthur surveyed him. Turn to your right, slowly. What am I, your personal model? Merlin murmured, rolling his eyes, but acquiescing to his request anyway. Arthur let out a low hum of disapproval. You'd never make it as a model. You're too lanky. Merlin's mouth dropped, offended. Excuse me? Arthur continued to eye him. Too lanky, he repeated. Merlin wondered briefly if it would be a good time now to scorch Arthur with a bolt of lightning. Something with a dramatic flair was good. Too lanky for a model, Arthur repeated, but this time he was nodding. But rather reasonable for a date. Merlin's jaw dropped again, this time in surprise. Excuse me? I need a date for a party tonight, Arthur repeated, turning to walk out of the shop. As he reached the door, he turned back to Merlin. Not taking no for an answer. Get yourself a suit, put it on my tab. Be back in 2 hours. With that said, he left the shop, leaving Merlin to wonder how he had suddenly gotten lucky.
The End. Selkie, written by Keizuku and read by Eos Rose. Arthur knew the story, so he didn't take any chances. He burned the sealskin as soon as he found it. He heard footsteps only moments after the skin began to crack and peel in the flames. He knew without even looking that his servant's fey eyes were burning into his shoulders, searing him with their gold light. 2 steps, and he had Merlin pressed back against the stone wall, the fire beneath him heating his back. Now try and escape, he grinned into the curve of Merlin's neck. He felt like a hound scenting its prey, and the tang of Merlin's sweat opened up a gaping void in his stomach and stiffened his cock, a need he'd only been half aware of before now. You can't, can you?
No, sir.
Merlin's head bowed forward like a molten branch curling in on itself. It took him aback. He had expected resistance, a fight he could win with subtle, or not so subtle, application of force, not this bending to his will. But even so, it made him hard, so hard, and he pushed Merlin down, opening his own trousers and drawing the dark head to him. Merlin's mouth was strangely cool, which made him jerk and then push up harder into it, watching Merlin's jaw work to accommodate him. Merlin moved back until just the head was in his mouth, licking delicately, his lashes dark on his cheeks, so pretty. And then Arthur pulled him back down, the shudder and soft choke making him groan and want to push farther, deeper. Merlin was working hard, unprecedented, that was, and it was like a whirlpool around his dick, swirling and sucking. He was getting too close, though, so he pulled out and then tipped Merlin back with a foot on his chest. Merlin fell on his back, and the look on his face almost made Arthur shiver, like he was falling down some long, dark crevice. Arthur knelt hurriedly, smoothing back Merlin's hair, and he couldn't help himself. He had to kiss him, opening Merlin's lips with tongue and breath, pressing as close as he dared. Merlin didn't respond, and a seed of doubt uncurled in Arthur's chest. He couldn't force him. He wasn't a monster. But then Merlin moaned and kissed back, like he was waking up, or he wasn't quite sure if he knew what to do. Was he so unused to this body still? He'd have to ask him later. I'm going to know everything about you there is to know, he thought, his hands tightening on Merlin's shoulders. When he pulled back to look, Merlin had gone dazed and blank with desire. His hand came up to touch his mouth, and then moved as if to wipe away the wetness from it, and Arthur seized his wrist without a moment's thought, pinned it above his head as he leaned in to bite at Merlin's lips. If there was something missing in Merlin's eyes, some spark that had always been there before, he didn't see it. Merlin kissed him back eagerly this time, until he started tugging at his trousers. A hand on the boy's cock calmed him, though, or rather made him clench up like a clam, and then splay his legs open, breath rushing out of him in a gasp. Arthur's fist worked him firm but slow, thumbing the head now and again to test for precum. He didn't have to wait long.
You want this, don't you? Arthur breathed hotly. You've wanted it since you first became my servant, I bet.
Merlin whimpered, but his hips tried to take on a faster pace. Arthur pressed him back down. He wasn't angry, as he'd first been, when he'd found the skin, but there was something pressing him on, some need to tie Merlin to him with anything he could use. He wouldn't lose him, not to death, not to someone else, not to the sea, even if Merlin hated him for it. But he didn't rush it, knowing that way was folly, and Merlin running, probably through the castle half-dressed. He convinced with his mouth, and then his fingers, growing slowly more daring, and Merlin didn't object, didn't say anything, just moaned louder, and bashed him once in the face with a sharp hip, until Arthur had to put his hand over his mouth and hold him down.
"Tell me you want me," he said.
He'd discovered that mouthing Merlin's ear made him shudder and keen, while teeth made him buck. "I want you," Merlin said, and maybe sounded like he was just repeating the words Arthur had given him, but his breath was coming in huffs, and he couldn't stop squirming, so Arthur thought that was good enough. After his salve-coated fingers, it wasn't terribly difficult to get the first inch of his cock in, but then it was a struggle, and Merlin fought him, teeth and fingernails and flying elbows, though he was still hard as a rock against Arthur's belly. And finally, Arthur just gave an almighty shove, and it was over. Merlin was pierced to the root. He went deathly quiet and still. Arthur soothed with kisses and murmured nonsense in his ears. "So good, you're so good, oh, yes," until Merlin's brow smoothed, and he started, experimentally, to move. Arthur held himself very still, taking most of his weight on his knees and arms, until Merlin started wordlessly asking for more, with his hips and eyes and his hands clenched in Arthur's hair. Then Arthur must have hit exactly the right spot, because Merlin went wild, his legs heedlessly climbing up, pulling Arthur down until he lost traction and fell on top of him, huffing out a laugh. Merlin's face went red with effort and perhaps embarrassment, and he was grabbing handfuls of Arthur's ass, pushing and pulling him until Arthur cooperated and started fucking him faster, harder, deeper. Despite himself, Arthur came first, and it was short and merciless, leaving him stunned and lethargic. When he could think again, he realized Merlin was struggling under him, trying to get a hand down to his dick, and that was enough to make him move. He pinned Merlin's hands and then took care of it himself, thrusting gently until even that was too much. When it was all over, he raised himself enough to roll to the side and looked down at Merlin. Merlin's face was wet, and Arthur felt a sick jolt in his stomach. Merlin wasn't sobbing, but his eyes were just watering, tears running down his cheeks and into his ears, and Arthur could suddenly taste the salt that he must have licked from them. He hadn't noticed. He looked over at the fire. It had burned out. Nothing was left but a few blackened scraps. When he kissed Merlin again, tentatively, with his eyes open, all he could see was the ocean.
The End. Shared. Written by Cat77 and read by Eos Rose. It was different, really, the way the wine trickled from the warm cavern of Arthur's mouth and into his own. The coolness dimmed, but the flavor somehow more vibrant and bold. The soft press of Arthur's tongue against his lips and palate distracting enough to let a few drops escape. Merlin chased after those drops, licked his lips, and watched Arthur's eyes, bright with amusement, follow the movement.
"Really, Merlin?"
Arthur drawled as he leaned back in his chair, twirling the goblet idly in one hand.
If you had wanted me to share, all you had to do was ask.
The end. Standpoint. Written by Mistress Cat and read by Eos Rose.
What do you think you're doing? Arthur takes a bite of his apple.
I'm eating my lunch. I thought it was obvious.
Merlin glares at him the best he can, his head held in place by the unforgiving wood.
I thought you'd at least be on the other end of the town square, leering at my ass.
I can leer at your ass any time, Arthur says mildly. It's a nice day. The sun's out and the people are cheery. No one's throwing rotten fruit, not with the Crown Prince sitting right next to the stocks.
Arthur stretches lazily, enjoying the peace.
The End.
Study Break. Written by Cherry Bina and read by Eos Rose. Merlin looks up from his books in surprise when Arthur finds him at a study cubicle in the back corner of the library.
Come on, let's get out of here, Arthur says, nudging Merlin with his leg.
I can't. I have an exam tomorrow, and I really need to go over this again.
You always say that, but then you always get top marks, Arthur grumbles.
Merlin rolls his eyes.
I get top marks because I study.
You can study later. Arthur nudges him again, harder this time.
I'm not leaving this library, Arthur, Merlin says, resolutely crossing his arms and leaning back in his chair.
Arthur gets that familiar glint in his eye. The one Merlin knows means trouble, and before he even realizes what's happening, Arthur has Merlin out of his chair with his back to the desk.
You're so pushy, he says, but lets Arthur maneuver him up so he's sitting on the desk.
And you love it, Arthur answers with a smirk as he sits down in the chair Merlin was just occupying.
Arthur,
Merlin hisses as Arthur pulls the chair so he's sitting right between Merlin's legs.
You do realize we are not the only people in this library?
Arthur shrugs before attacking the button on Merlin's jeans.
I tried to get you to leave, but you insisted on staying put. The way I see it, you have only yourself to blame here.
Merlin's protest dies on his lips when Arthur pulls his cock out and strokes it from base to tip, his thumb flickering over the head.
Now remember, people are studying, so try to keep it down, Arthur says with mock seriousness before leaning in and licking the head of Merlin's cock.
Oh, shit, Merlin gasps and falls back onto his elbows, bumping his head on the back wall of the cubicle.
Arthur is ridiculously good at sucking cock, and it's all Merlin can do not to let out a loud and embarrassing moan when Arthur swallows him down. Despite his best efforts not to make a sound, Merlin can't help the way his breaths come fast and ragged as the tight, slick heat of Arthur's mouth surrounds him.
Arthur isn't doing much to stay quiet either, the way he's slurping obscenely at Merlin's cock, all wet and filthy. A tiny part of Merlin's brain thinks he should be outraged. But when Arthur does that thing with his tongue, Merlin decides he doesn't give a shit if the whole library knows Arthur is sucking him off.
Merlin grips the edge of the desk when his cock hits the back of Arthur's throat, and when Arthur swallows around it, taking him deeper, Merlin's hips buck up of their own accord.
Arthur brings his hands up to Merlin's waist, holding him down without ever losing his rhythm.
Oh, God, Merlin gasps. Arthur, I'm gonna come.
Arthur just makes an encouraging noise and takes him all the way down his throat until his chin bumps into Merlin's balls. Arthur has him pinned at the hips, and Merlin can't move. He can't thrust up into Arthur's mouth. He can't cry out, he can't do anything except bite his lip and come down Arthur's throat. Arthur pulls his mouth off Merlin's cock with a wet pop and grins up from between his legs. Merlin slumps back against the cubicle and does his best to glare, but it's really hard when his toes are still tingling.
You're a bastard, he says breathlessly.
I think you mean, oh, Arthur, you give the best blowjobs ever.
Merlin chuckles weakly and wraps his hand in Arthur's hair, tugging him up so he's leaning over Merlin. You give the best blowjobs ever, but let's not forget how much you love sucking my cock, Merlin whispers when Arthur is close.
Maybe, Arthur murmurs, and then licks his way into Merlin's mouth, kissing him soundly.
Merlin can feel Arthur's erection digging into his hip through his jeans. It's unmistakable when Arthur thrusts against him.
That's very subtle, Arthur, really, Merlin says when he breaks the kiss.
I swear to God, if you say anything about having to study, that will be the last blowjob I ever give you.
I'm not sucking you off here, Merlin says, glancing around as he zips himself back up. There is still no one in their row of cubicles, but he can hear hushed voices not too far away, and now that the glow from his orgasm is fading, he feels nervous again.
Arthur smirks and starts stuffing Merlin's books into his bag.
Then I guess we just have to leave, don't we?
You planned this, didn't you? Merlin asks when Arthur slings Merlin's bag over his shoulder and grabs Merlin's hand, pulling him to his feet. Arthur just grins and pushes Merlin toward the exit.
The end.
Sweltering, written by Astolat and read by Eos Rose. The castle is sweltering in the midsummer heat, stones breathing damply under the sun's height when even the air lies still. Training and necessary drill is a thing for the morning, to be endured. Now at last the armor has been discarded, and Arthur's flung himself naked over the crushed red expanse of his coverlet, his hair untidy against the crimson, and his back sticking to the wool beneath him. Thin, shining lines of sweat trickle down the side of his face and his arms, as he breathes only shallowly, resenting even that much movement. He is miserable with heat, his skin prickly and rank with dried sweat, but he can't move enough to go and summon a bath. He closes his eyes and tries not to be, to somehow find a way outside the flesh that feels this moment like a trap. He can't entirely manage it. Even the breath of air stirred by the opening door is a blessing, for the moment it lasts. Then there's an awkward ringing clatter of jug and ewer and goblets. I'll just be leaving this here, then, Merlin says, and... Bring me water, Arthur says with his eyes shut, and flicks his fingers when Merlin comes over to the bed with a goblet. In a skin. Do you want me to pour it right in your mouth? Merlin says sarcastically, and Arthur says, Yes, do that. Merlin's eye roll is silent and perfectly palpable. Arthur almost smiles, except it's too much work. Merlin tips the jug carelessly, and water splashes sweet into Arthur's mouth, over his cheeks and chin and neck. It's blessedly, miraculously cold, as though Merlin somehow managed to bring it up from the cellar depths without lugging it all the way through the oven-hot corridors. Arthur gulps at it thirstily, not caring that there's water puddling over his eyelids and dripping into his ears. At least, not until he's drunk his fill, and is feeling more in charity with his own body. Then he tells Merlin, Now clean up the mess.
You're the mess, Merlin says. Do you want a bath?
He still doesn't want to move even that far, and this is excuse enough to avoid it. No, I don't want to move from my comfortable bed because you can't help pouring half the jug on me when all I want is a drink. Wipe me off.
Ass? Merlin mutters, not really quietly enough. But he goes and comes back with clean cotton rags, so Arthur generously overlooks it as Merlin mops away water and sweat and grime. He can't help but sigh, his chest unbound enough to take in deeper breaths, as Merlin wipes his neck.
More,
he says when Merlin's finished. He doesn't care anymore how it looks. There's a pause. The bed creaks with Merlin's weight. Then the sound of water trickling as Merlin wrings out a fresh rag into the ewer. And then it's cold on his shoulders and his chest, strokes along the lines of his body. Arthur half expects Merlin to be rough, in what little revenge he can get away with, and Arthur doesn't know what it means that Merlin's hands are gentle instead, and careful, dipping into every hollow of his ribs, following the curve of the muscle of his lazily outflung arms. Without being told, Merlin wipes down his feet and his calves and his thighs. By the end of it, he's handling Arthur's limbs with a kind of steadily growing confidence that Arthur eventually recognizes from the second time Merlin put on his armor. He has no intention of admitting as much to Merlin, or anyone else in the world for that matter, but Merlin is a quick learner. These days he sometimes seems to know better than Arthur does what he wants. There have been times when Arthur's opened his mouth to order a buckle tightened, and before he can, Merlin has done something to three others entirely, and it's better than any fit Arthur's ever had. Or if he is just thinking perhaps he wants some bread and meat, Merlin hands him an apple. It breaks crisp and sweet on his tongue, and he's not hungry anymore in the least. There's a rustle of bed covers, and then Merlin says, "Roll over," and pushes him. Arthur blindly rolls, and he's on the clean sheets of the bed instead of the woolen coverlet, and there's a pillow waiting for his head. He lies there drowsing while Merlin wipes his back clean, shoulders to waist to ankles, long, smooth strokes. He seems to be finished, and Arthur is thinking of ordering Merlin to draw his bath now. Then Merlin wrings just a little water onto him out of a fresh rag, directly between Arthur's shoulder blades so the drops go trickling freely down his spine and collect in the hollow of his lower back like a small pool of cold. Arthur groans involuntarily, and Merlin wipes it away and does it again. Arthur doesn't even think of interrupting anymore. Merlin keeps dripping water onto him like rain on parched earth, all over his body. It's trickling through his hair, spilling down along his ribs, and then Merlin pours a little more over Arthur's ass and thighs. The water finds a way between his legs, goes everywhere like an extension of Merlin's hands, and Arthur is breathlessly hard, swollen, where his cock is pressed hotly between his belly and the bed. "Hmm," Merlin says over him, thoughtfully, and this time he trickles the water more carefully, and it's dripping between Arthur's legs again. Arthur has his face pressed into the pillow, and he's panting into it when Merlin bends down and licks some of the water off him with the tip of his tongue. It's exactly what he wanted. Arthur doesn't move. He doesn't have to. Merlin presses him open and licks him again, and then he moves Arthur's legs apart. Arthur hears him drinking, and Merlin's mouth is cold and shockingly good when it touches him again, tongue poking inquisitively in, because Merlin doesn't know the meaning of boundaries. Not for his tongue, or his fingers, or his cock, slick and long and hard, pushing into Arthur as he lies there pinned down by a fresh wave of heat, sweating all over again.
The End. Tether, written by Self-Induced and read by Eos Rose. He wakes up in Merlin's arms, nose tucked into the soft skin of his throat, swallows back a wave of desire so intense he's surprised it doesn't wake Merlin somehow, and holds very still. Merlin wakes anyway, making careful motions to move away without disturbing Arthur's wounds. "You were shivering, so cold. I thought..." he stutters, whispering in the pre-dawn light. "Gaius says that body heat is best for..." "Yes, well..." Arthur clears his throat, feeling bereft, but lies anyway. "I'm quite warm now." "Of course." Merlin gets up, having successfully extricated himself. "Good. That's very good."
"Where are you going?"
"I'll be right here." Merlin tips his head and smiles sleepily at him, curling up in the chair by the bed. Do you need anything?
Yes, Arthur thinks, stupidly, but says, this bed is quite big, Merlin.
Oh, Merlin nods. All right.
Comes back under the covers, but lies carefully out of reach.
Thank you, sire.
Arthur makes an appropriately dismissive sound and curls a little closer, as surreptitiously as he can with his injuries. Eventually, exhaustion makes Merlin relax into sleep and leaves Arthur to watch the first rays of sunrise catch on his face, note the shadows under his eyes and the tensely drawn mouth, and he reaches out before he can stop himself, tracing the shadows of Merlin's eyelashes, the lines of his cheekbones. Arthur swallows. Merlin's mouth relaxes, moving into the palm cupping his face, trusting. And somehow they're much closer together than before, and Arthur's last thought before falling back asleep is that Merlin has stubble. Really silly, boyish stubble. But it's soft against his nose when Arthur tucks his head in above Merlin's shoulder, and the soft laugh this draws from him is more affectionate than uncharitable.
The End. That's How the Light Gets In, written by Mistress Cat and read by Eos Rose. Camelot is burning. Thick black smoke winds around the turrets, up and up until it covers the sky. It could have been yours, Nimue says, but you were afraid, and now look, by refusing to make a choice you have lost everything. Camelot is gone.
No, he hasn't. No, it isn't.
Merlin ignores the sorceress, lips forming a silent litany of words that keep her bound.
What do you think you're achieving? Nimue laughs, wild and deprecating. It's too late. There's nothing left but ruins.
She is wrong. Over her shoulder, Merlin sees the steady stream of evacuees pouring out of the gates. At the back of his mind, the light grows stronger the closer they come. Every spark is a life. Camelot is not the castle. It is not the stone walls, the houses, the cobbled streets. It is not lifeless things. The city burns, but Camelot survives. In every man and woman and child, safe because Merlin had made a choice, the right one. He had gone to Arthur and told him everything, had bought them just enough time to get everyone out. Nimue screams, face twisted with rage. She can see them now. Too many people to be just a straggled group of survivors. Far too many to be just luck. Merlin blocks her out, tightening the spell. Power rolls off him in waves, visible for all to see. That, too, is fine now. He scans the crowd, eyes and mind working in unison, trying to find that one golden spark among hundreds. There, of course, the last one out. Arthur rides through the gates, covered in soot, but shining bright and warm like the sun inside Merlin's head, inside his heart. Merlin breathes a sigh of relief. Arthur is alive, and with him, so is Camelot. The End.
Two Futures When Your Love Is Mine, written by Fantasmic and read by Eos Rose. There is something to be said about patience. Mostly Arthur finds that he is not, in fact, a patient man. He remembers long feasts in his boyhood that seemed to stretch on forever. Men and women laughing, minstrels playing jaunty tunes, and jesters pulling coins from behind their ears, careful that their tricks never seemed too clever. There had been dancing and flowing wine amongst the adults, and Arthur remembers when the feast had ceased its pleasantry, when the night had grown long and his eyelids had drooped until he feared he may have fallen face first into the custard. He remembers the way that he had felt so very shamed, how he had thought, Father is awake. Father is not tired. He also, however, remembers sneaking off into an empty staircase and settling his head against the chilled stone. How he had woken up hours later to a smiling elderly maid who had hustled him off into bed before his father came to see him using the flagstones as pillows. There had been many incidents when he had realized that patience was perhaps not the strongest of his virtues. Tutoring that had stretched too long, a servant taking an extra 5 minutes to draw up his bath, his first horse studiously ignoring his efforts to get it to move, preferring to instead nibble on a patch of spring grass. When Merlin had come to Camelot, all laughing smiles and pale skin, then Arthur's patience had been tried like it never had before. The thing about Merlin is that he is too honest. When he truly believes something, he speaks it. He knows nothing of the ways of the court, and many a time Arthur has feared for his life because of his servant's errant way of thinking. On such occasions, Merlin will commit truly atrocious blunders, leaving Arthur scrambling to pick up the pieces after him. The first time he had served Arthur and his father at mealtime, he had forgotten to address the king as Sire or Your Highness, choosing instead to simply pour the wine with a smile and a cheerful, "There you are," as if they were equals. In truth, Arthur blamed himself for the transgression, blamed himself for letting Merlin get away with calling him Arthur, and for not throwing him in the stocks immediately the first time Merlin had smirked out a, "Yes, sire," that was in no way subservient, but instead mocking and amused. But Uther was not Arthur, and he had been far from amused. After that, Arthur had learned that sometimes patience may be best with Merlin, that taking the time to explain the simplest of etiquette may be worth it in the long run. Even so, there was just something about Merlin, something that tugged fondly at Arthur's heartstrings, but never seemed to outweigh how utterly ridiculous Merlin was sometimes. But then there are times when it isn't so hard, having patience, that is. Times like now, when the castle is quiet, and Merlin is standing at the foot of his bed saying, "Will that be all, sire?" Times like now, when Merlin's eyes are bright and the halls are dark, and Arthur wants more than anything to say, "No, Merlin, that is not all," and drag him into bed. Times like now, when there is a droplet of sweat tracing the line of Merlin's jaw. Times like now, when Merlin is licking his lips and eyeing Arthur's naked torso with curiosity and contemplation rather than outright lust, as if he hasn't quite noticed just yet the lengths that Arthur will go to keep him close, as if he doesn't even notice. "Yes, Merlin, you may go." Merlin goes. But then, of course, the patience eventually pays off. It appears to dawn on Merlin slowly. Weeks of increasingly frequent stares, moments of heat in Merlin's eyes when he dresses Arthur, his hands lingering on bare skin longer and longer, until Arthur thinks that, really, he should just turn and kiss him then and there, half naked and still dripping with bath water. Weeks where Merlin does nothing but stare at odd parts of Arthur's body, the line of his jaw, the curve of his wrist, his fingers skittering reverently over the inside of his elbow, and, increasingly, his knees. It's a bit like watching a star being born, that awareness coming to life in Merlin's eyes, the heat of it, and how now, when Arthur grins at him, his breath catches. Merlin in love is possibly the most commanding thing that Arthur has ever seen. He can't seem to look away. Perhaps he should feel bad, watching this new love slide into place right over the friendship and the loyalty and the grudging respect. He should feel awful, because there would never be a future for them. He should stop it now, while it's still new. But he won't. He won't, because though he will be king soon, and thus will need to find a queen and an heir. Merlin is the best thing he has. Patience. It always pays off. In the end, it's almost an accident. Nothing so cliched as Merlin tripping and Arthur catching him with his mouth, but it's close. It comes down to too much wine, and the rush of victory, the thrill of the hunt still in his blood, even though he is home once more, pleasantly stuffed with food and the fire warming his shoulders. And it happens just like that. Merlin stretching over his shoulder to fill his cup, pressed warm and close, smelling of sandalwood and herbs, and Arthur had reached, ghosted a finger across one sharp cheekbone, and watched as Merlin's eyes had widened, how he'd leaned forward and pressed his lips to Arthur's. Arthur hadn't expected Merlin to be gifted with an overwhelming knowledge of carnal delights, but he hadn't expected him to be naive about it either. In bed, Merlin is a little bit awkward. He's all sharp elbows and bony knees, laughing apologies and nervous, almost giggles. He isn't particularly gifted in the art of cocksucking, and their first kiss feels more like something he should be exchanging with a blushing virgin rather than with, you know, Merlin. It isn't quite what Arthur had been expecting, what with the build-up and the unbearable tension, the quick caresses and intimate glances, but it's something Arthur can work with. What are you... Hush, Merlin. The room is quiet, the fire's burned low, and Merlin is stretched beneath him, flushed and fidgeting, his cock hard against his belly. He looks wonderful against Arthur's sheets, bony elbows and all. Arthur isn't exactly used to doing this sort of thing. He is used to maids pressing themselves close, in empty rooms, and noble women who giggle and wrap their stained lips around his cock. He is used to stable boys looking up at him with heavy-lidded eyes, of the feel of them wrapped so prettily around his dick. He is even used to noblemen and the quick and dirty press of cock against cock in darkened corridors, scarcely breathing, lest someone stumble across them. This he is not used to. He isn't used to the sharp press of his own fingers inside himself, or the way that it kind of hurts, just a little bit. He isn't used to slicking another man's cock and sinking back onto it, groaning as he sinks deeper and deeper. He is not familiar at all with it, or with the way Merlin gasps beneath him when he experimentally rolls his hips, or the way his own mouth parts in wonder when he maneuvers them into just the right angle, just the right rhythm. He isn't used to it at all, but Merlin's expression is worth it. It is push and pull and gasp and moan and breathe, and it is amazingly good. Arthur is not a patient man, no, but sometimes he figures it just might be worth it.
The End. Under the Sheets, written by Miss Lucy Jane and read by Eos Rose. The morning was cold, foggy, and damp. Merlin thought, as he shoved himself upright, that one's bedding was always at its most soft and warm when you couldn't stay in it. Arthur, of course, was still reveling in that fact when Merlin brought him his breakfast. "Good morning, Your Highness," Merlin sang out cheerfully, knowing it would annoy him, and let the dishes clatter a bit on the table. Arthur opened one blue eye and mumbled something that sounded like, and rolled onto his other side, his back to Merlin. "Arthur, you know you have to meet your father in an hour," Merlin said, and went to the bed. He pulled back the heavy curtain and grasped the thick coverlet. "You haven't even bathed yet." Arthur shot out one bare, muscled arm and wrapped it around his waist, pulling Merlin onto the bed without much trouble. Merlin squawked and fell in a tangle of limbs and bedding, and stared into Arthur's eyes as Arthur smiled at him demurely. "Good morning, Merlin,"
he said, and planted a kiss between Merlin's brows. If I meet my father in an hour, that means I have 30 minutes before I must eat and dress. And that means we have 30 minutes to enjoy this lovely morning.
Lovely? Merlin repeated. It's cold as December outside, and I can't even see across the courtyard. The fog is so thick.
Exactly, Arthur said in a satisfied tone. Lovely. He pulled the sheets and coverlet over Merlin, despite Merlin's protests of, I'm still wearing my shoes, and some of us don't have time to lounge in bed all day, my lord. No, Arthur tucked Merlin in beside him, as if they'd spent the night pleasuring each other, his arm curled around Merlin to hold him to his bosom. And the fact of the matter was, it was lovely. The sheets were warm, Arthur's skin was warm, and Merlin's fingers, which had been cold ever since he had to break the ice across the top of the bowl in order to wash his face, began to tingle as warmth returned to them. He expected Arthur to start pawing at him. The prince was not often tactful in communicating his desire, but Arthur only continued holding him, thumb idly brushing the nape of his neck. Merlin frowned, puzzled, and then slid his hand down Arthur's stomach. Arthur stopped him, his hand wrapped around Merlin's wrist.
There isn't time.
Then what do you want?
To lie here and be warm together for a while.
Merlin started to answer, then simply said, Oh. Because it was the only answer he had. After a moment longer, Arthur said, Any time you wish to stay the night with me rather than hurry off, so that we can repeat this without the theatrics, would be welcome.
Gaius would wonder where I slept.
You are my manservant. I have the right to demand you stay with me sometimes.
Yes, of course, Merlin murmured.
And you are my lover, and sometimes I would like to wake up with you.
Merlin looked at him, skeptical, and Arthur had a contented smile that Merlin suspected only he ever saw.
Very well, Merlin said, and closed his eyes to enjoy a few more minutes of warmth and softness, and Arthur's breath, ruffling his hair.
The End. Very Nearly, written by Cagey Girl and read by Eos Rose.
So he's this stubborn about everything, then?
I'm afraid so, sire. And thus Merlin knew he wasn't dead, because in his limited, and would that it continued to be so, personal experience, people did not mock the dead. Then he tried to open his eyes, and he wished that he had been mistaken, because the dead, he sincerely hoped, did not feel nearly so much pain. A shadow fell over him, dimming the light boring into his skull, and a hand settled on his forehead.
Come now, Merlin, and reassure Arthur that your brain is no more scrambled now than it was this morning.
Hey, Merlin said, quietly, though. I thought the injured were supposed to get sympathy. But he opened his eyes because, well, not that he really believed Gaius about Arthur worrying, but anyway, he opened his eyes. Gaius was bent over him, of course, giving him a look that was part sympathy but mostly amusement, and shouldn't that have been the other way around?
Welcome back, he said, and offered Merlin a vial before saying anything else.
This, unfortunately, had happened often enough that Merlin accepted the potion without protest. He was even fairly certain that Gaius kept that particular blue vial on hand, just for pain remedies for Merlin, which was a disheartening commentary on his life in Camelot. Speaking of, he looked past Gaius, and there indeed was Arthur, watching him with arms folded over his chest, resplendent in his full armor. A little too resplendent, actually, The sun angling through the window glared off his plate. Merlin winced and closed his eyes. "The injured," Arthur said, "only get sympathy when the injury is not their own fault." But Merlin heard him take a step to the side, mail links jingling softly. He remembered then. They'd been sparring, which meant Arthur had been sparring and Merlin had been unwillingly learning about blocking. But it all went a bit hazy after that. Merlin opened his eyes again. "What happened?" "You managed to find the only rabbit hole in the entire training field, the hard way." Arthur's face was in shadow now, but there was no mistaking the sardonic tilt of his head or lilt of his voice. "Congratulations!" "Thanks," Merlin said. That explained why his ankle hurt, too, though he'd only just noticed it as his head quieted a bit. Gaius turned away to look at Arthur. "Your Highness, might I ask you to fetch a compress? I left it on my workbench, and my knees are not what they used to be." "Of course," Arthur said, nodding to Gaius. He descended the steps, and Gaius leaned in close to Merlin. "From what I gather, he struck a blow to your helmet, and you tripped and knocked yourself into a stone. There was a nasty lump on the back of your head, though I dare say it could have been much worse." Gaius patted him on the shoulder and gave him a more serious look. "Go easy on him, Merlin. He thought he'd done you a terrible injury." "Go easy on him?" Merlin asked, disbelieving. But then Arthur was back and Gaius looked about to unleash the eyebrow. So Merlin settled for frowning and trying to feel the back of his head without lifting his neck any more than he had to. Gaius helped him get the compress in place. Oh, there it was, Merlin thought, sucking in a breath. A sizable lump, more tender than the rest. After a smile and another shoulder pat, Gaius stood up and turned to Arthur again. "He'll need to rest a bit more and to stay off that ankle for a few days." He looked between the two of them. "I don't think I need to explain that he should also avoid blows to the head." "But you'll do it anyway," Merlin muttered, because why was Arthur getting Merlin's instructions? He was hurt, not insensible. "Sometimes I don't know why I bother," Gaius said, making a face at him. Merlin laughed and then regretted it as his head throbbed. Gaius watched him for a moment, then waved him off and made his way down to his workroom, closing the door on his way out. Arthur stepped closer, arms still folded, the ghost of a smile on his lips. "So you've found a new way to slack off on your duties. Very industrious of you." "I had help, apparently," Merlin said, raising his eyebrows at Arthur. Something solemn and dark whisked across Arthur's face, wiping away all traces of humor, and Merlin wished he could call the words back. He started to push himself into a sitting position, but pain spiked down his neck, and all his attention went to breathing through it. When the pain ebbed, there was an arm around his shoulders and a hand on his chest holding him up. Arthur had taken off his gloves at some point, and his hand was pale against Merlin's blue tunic. When he could keep himself steady, Merlin whispered, "I'm all right," in lieu of nodding, and Arthur leaned away from him. He kept one hand on Merlin's near shoulder, as if afraid he might topple over. Merlin didn't make an issue of it because he wasn't sure Arthur was wrong. He gave it a moment before looking over at Arthur. His face was still serious, but the look in his eyes was growing lighter. "It's a good thing you decided to wake up when you did. I'd started considering all sorts of ridiculous things." Merlin blinked at him. "Like what?" There was a smile curling around Arthur's lips now. He dropped his chin and looked at Merlin through his lashes and, oh, Merlin very nearly hated that look, because it almost always got him into trouble. "There are tales that say a sleeper can be awakened by a kiss from a handsome prince." "Oh," Merlin said, feeling his face grow hot. He swallowed and put on his best polite, inquisitive expression and asked, "Do you know any?" Arthur broke out in a laugh, the kind that made him look boyish and carefree.
You're very lucky. I've been given strict orders not to hit you.
His hand tightened on Merlin's shoulder, and his eyes narrowed.
For a while.
Merlin grinned back. I'd be luckier if you'd decided to try out some of those ridiculous things you'd been thinking. And, oh, look, there was trouble, right on schedule. Maybe he really had scrambled his brains. Maybe Arthur would believe that. Maybe he needed to stop staring at Arthur before Arthur got the wrong idea. On the other hand, it did afford him a very good view of the look on Arthur's face. Serious again, eyes wide. He felt Arthur's hand leave his shoulder and trail across his neck over his chin, cupping his cheek with a warm palm. And he saw Arthur lean in ever so slowly, and Merlin turned into it, wetting his lips and drawing an uneven breath. It was very nearly a chaste kiss, but then Arthur parted his lips, and it very much wasn't. It was heat and passion under the barest veneer of control, and Merlin let himself be lost in the rush of it. Arthur finally pulled away and rested his forehead against Merlin's, both of them breathing fast and ragged. Merlin had gotten his hand wrapped around Arthur's wrist, and Arthur stroked his thumb across Merlin's cheek before letting him go.
"Get some rest," he said, his voice rough. He didn't look at Merlin as he stood up. "Come see me when you've recovered."
"Arthur," Merlin said, reaching out, bracing himself to stand. He wouldn't let Arthur leave like this. Head and ankle be damned.
"Come see me when you've recovered," Arthur said again, in that same voice, low and strained,
and this time he met Merlin's gaze. His eyes were blazing, hungry, and Merlin flushed hot at what he saw there. "I will," he promised. Arthur gave a sharp nod, and then he was gone. Merlin lay back down and recovered the compress from where it had fallen, though he'd come close to forgetting the headache entirely. For once, he had every intention of following Gaius's orders to the letter. He had a recovery to make, and a prince to see.
The End. Wordless Gratitude. Written by Rebecca Ann, 08, and read by Eos Rose. The second time Arthur and Merlin saved Aeldor, they buried no one. After, they stayed. Merlin helped care for the sheep, accustomed to holding down the bleeding animals. The village needed the thick wool for warm winter clothing. Arthur assisted in the kitchens, wordlessly working alongside the women, kneading bread, slicing turnips, making hearty stews to accompany roasted venison, in a village where meals were often a communal effort. Merlin saw him once, toiling away alongside Huneth, his sleeves rolled up, baring the skin of his forearms. Sweat dampened his fringe, salty droplets sliding down his temples, leaving slick tracks in their wake. And he knew then that he was looking at his king, a warrior on the battlefield, but one willing to put down the sword and take up the ladle. Merlin watched him scoop the thick brown soup into cracked bowls and give them to the hungry villagers. Arthur smiled when he handed Merlin a bowl. He looked content. At night, Merlin wanted to say thanks, but words seemed inadequate, so he lay next to Arthur, a hand on his chest and his lips on his king's, his kisses conveying everything he couldn't express with words. The End. Worrying the Thread. Written by Gillionin and read by Eos Rose. Merlin was pacing. He thought that he must have worn a groove before Arthur's door, and he'd certainly mangled the hem of his jacket from worrying at it. He had closed his hands into fists to keep from picking at the cloth, but now his fingernails were digging into the palms of his hands. He had left it too long, left everything too long. His mouth was dry. If Arthur could have seen him, he would have remarked tartly that Merlin was making him anxious.
There was nothing for it. Arthur had to find out about the magic sooner or later. They'd already had far too many close scrapes, far too many inexplicable but fortuitous coincidences. It was better to admit everything now, before the next harrowing martial escapade forced him to call on his powers. Or, for that matter, before Arthur caught Merlin using magic to shine his boots. He paused, licked his lips, and carefully pried his fingernails from his palms. Terror was making him ill. With his gut churning uncomfortably, Merlin screwed up his courage and threw the door open. Arthur regarded him steadily from his chair. "There's a custom in Camelot," he said. "When people want to enter a room, they make a fist, like this." And he closed his gloved fist, holding it up for examination. "And then they bang it against the door. We call it knocking." "I need to speak to you," said Merlin. He reasoned that knocking could safely be mastered once he'd sorted out whether he would be executed in the near future. Sighing, Arthur stripped his gloves off and tossed them down on the table. "You seem to have got it into your head that you can speak to me whenever you like. It's really very irregular." "This is important. I have to confess something," Merlin said softly. He forced himself to take one step closer, and then another. This might not be so bad, he thought. If he can joke with me like this, he wouldn't execute me directly after, would he? Soon enough, he was standing with his hand upon the table, most emphatically not picking up Arthur's glove and worrying at it. To stop his hand shaking and picking and digging, he clasped one of Arthur's hands in both of his own. Arthur looked up at him. Merlin felt a sudden fondness for that upturned face, which he had seen in the pallor of illness and the dreamy-eyed oblivion of love. He remembered how willingly Arthur had laid down his life in trade for Merlin's, and his own terror that he had failed to defend his prince. "Let's hear it," said Arthur. And damn it, his mouth was dry again. Merlin licked his lips, closing his eyes as he summoned the willpower to. Arthur exploded with laughter. Merlin found this very rude. "I know what this is about," cried Arthur, breaking into another gale of laughter. Merlin's blood all went cold at once. But there was Arthur, laughing uproariously, squeezing at Merlin's hand as though it was just so terribly funny that his servant had been hiding magical powers from him for nigh on a year. Given the circumstances, Merlin felt that he had every right to demand an explanation. You know what this is about, do you?" he hazarded. Arthur made what was likely a very sincere effort at composing himself. "I mean, it's endearing, really, that you've considered it a secret. Even more endearing that you've come to me to confess. But you can't imagine I haven't seen the evidence, can you? You have practically been advertising it to everyone you meet." Merlin pressed his lips tightly together and swallowed. It was a good sign that Arthur was amused, wasn't it? A sign that meant Merlin wasn't likely to be executed? "Do you think your father knows?" he asked. "About, "He never notices anything like that," answered Arthur at once. "Even among the knights." He lowered his voice to an intrigued breath of sound. "I've heard of practices that likely would have gotten them locked up if my father had got wind of them." Suddenly, Merlin had the sense that the conversation was getting away from him. "You don't think it's dangerous, then? You're all right with it?" "Of course I'm all right with it," said Arthur, and then he rose from his chair and kissed Merlin full upon the mouth. Merlin had faced evil sorceresses, questing beasts, undead knights, and one extremely tenacious rat.
and even numbered among these formidable opponents, this kiss solidly won the award for most unusual thing that had ever happened to him. He managed to place his hands on Arthur's hips without major incident, and even parted his lips when the brush of Arthur's tongue seemed to suggest that such partings would be highly encouraged. Arthur made a rough, hungry sound that vibrated against Merlin's lips, and Merlin wondered if a man could literally die from sexiness. Rather sadistically, Arthur drew back just a fragment of an inch, just far enough that his every word ghosted warm air over Merlin's lips. "It doesn't need to be complicated," he whispered. "No, definitely no complication here," Merlin agreed, half breathless.
"So we're good?"
"We're good," answered Merlin at once, and he crossed that fingernail of space between them to kiss Arthur again. There were probably more efficient ways to shut the door than to press the Crown Prince against it and kiss him incoherent, but none of those ways were half as fun. By the time they'd parted enough to breathe, much less to think, they were lying at an angle on Arthur's bed, and Merlin's jacket and neckerchief had gone missing. Arthur's shirt was falling off his shoulder, the questing beast's bite had left a thick ridge of scar there, and Merlin's fingers stilled on the shining pink flesh.
"I thought you were dead for certain," he whispered.
"Well, I'm not," said Arthur brusquely.
"Can we have a tender moment later? I'm in a state."
"A state of idiocy," laughed Merlin, and for that Arthur had to box his ears.
"Don't go getting familiar because I let you kiss me," he said sternly, shifting to straddle Merlin's waist.
"Are you kidding? You kissed me."
"Didn't see you complaining."
And Merlin didn't complain when Arthur kissed him again. This kiss was slower, though, and more leisurely, as though they had all the time in the world to kiss one another and rock their hips together. In a space between kisses, Merlin murmured,
"You're sure it's not dangerous? If someone found out..."
"Relax, Merlin. It's not as though we're practicing sorcery here." Merlin felt a chill between his shoulder blades. He nerved himself up to say something, anything that he'd meant to say. Then Arthur's hip shifted just right against his own, and he had to grab Arthur by the hair and drag him down to be kissed.
"Perhaps," decided Merlin, "some confessions were simply not meant to occur."
The end.